Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. I'm Joe Donahue. You are listening to the roundtable panel. It is 12 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Thursday, the 17th of August. Very nice to have you with us. And we have a great panel for you. We have a lot to discuss, and we'll get right to it. Just a quick reminder that if you would like to join in on our conversation, you can do so. All you have to do is write panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Let me introduce the panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Yippee.
It does seem like kind of a yippee day, doesn't it?
It does.
Yippee.
It's sold out, but we're going to be doing a mayoral debate at the Linda tonight, live mayoral debate.
It's not sold out. If you're listening on the radio, you can still listen on the radio. It'll be live.
You can. You could even watch it on television, but we discourage that.
Yes. No, listen to your public radio station. What time? Seven? Okay, we'll find out. We'll find out. Eight o'clock. We, you know, Alan, you and I both should make a concerted effort. We got to start reading the newsletter.
Yeah. I even have to read my own stuff.
Oh, by the way, so they're doing work on the parking lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I parked in the company vehicle slot. Am I going to get towed?
Sounds like a yes. No. Am I going to have to pay the fine?
Right, that's the real question. I parked next to Alan, but I figured because all of the spots are because they're working on the side of the wall.
Oh, well, the towing thing is very difficult. You know, we have to pay these guys, the towing inspectors, and then we have to pay the dog handlers because we have all the, you know, the Doberman Pinschers and everything else out there. And then we have to do all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm safe.
I think the answer is yes, you're safe.
Okay, thank you. I was going to ask you, and then you were in Media Project, and, you know, first things first. Kaylin Brown is here. Kaylin Brown is a journalism professor at the College of St. Rose, and she is also the chair of the communications department. We are thrilled to have her here on this Thursday. Good morning, Kaylin.
Good morning, Joe Donahue.
Good to see you.
She didn't say good morning, everybody, because she's mad at me for something I said on the Media Project.
Good morning, Teresa. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
It's a skippy dippy day.
Yeah. It's, well, good. So we'll have to wait and hear the show over the weekend to find out what you guys were arguing about.
Anytime online.
Or 6 o'clock on Sunday and 3 o'clock on Monday.
She gave you a shot?
No.
Or you gave her a shot? Oh, okay.
A shot of whiskey, a shot of what?
I deflected.
Yeah, you did. You did very well.
And I rose.
And I apologize to anything I might have said about Ken and Barbie.
I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
Did he go low and you went high?
Yes, Michelle Obama. Thank you.
And Teresa Bourgeois is with us, and we couldn't be more delighted. Thank you very much for being with us, communications consultant, and we are happy you are here. Thank you very much.
Delighted to be here.
All right.
A skippy-dippy day.
A skippy-dippy day, indeed.
It is a sunny day, which is happy.
It's lovely.
What did I see on your shoulder? I see a bluebird on your shoulder. Zippity-doo-dah, zippity-dah.
Yeah. Why am I? What a wonderful land is, sunshine. Come on. You don't want me to sing. Go ahead. You sing. Where's the banjo?
So the Donald Trump comments of 2 days ago are still making news, of course. And why wouldn't they be? And why shouldn't they be? The Trump comments on race open breach with CEOs, military, and the GOP. That is the headline in this morning's New York Times. President Trump found himself increasingly isolated in a racial crisis of his own making on Wednesday, abandoned by the nation's top business executives, contradicted by military leaders, and shunned by Republicans outraged by his defense of white nationalist protesters in Charlottesville, Virginia. The breach with the business community was the most striking. Titans of American industry and finance revolted against a man they had seen as one of their own, concluding Wednesday morning they could no longer serve on two of Mr. Trump's advisory panels. But before, Stephen Schwarzman, the chief executive of the Blackstone Group and one of Mr. Trump's closest business confidants, could announce a decision to disband Mr. Trump's strategic and policy forum in a prepared statement calling intolerance, racism, and violence an affront to core American values, the president undercut him and did it himself in a tweet. Rather than putting pressure on the business people of the Manufacturing Council and Strategy Policy Forum, I am ending both, Mr. Trump wrote. We will get more into the divide between the GOP and the military in a moment, but let us start with the CEOs, Alan Chartok.
Well, look, the real question is who can get to the door the fastest at this stage? Businesses have constituents. They have people who have to buy. Campbell's Soup has to sell to everybody with all colors of on their skin, in their skins, and pigmentation and the rest of it. And, you know, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to sit there and figure out what these conversations sounded like while they were all sitting around the table deciding what to do. And first Trump said, well, I'll get lots more of them. It doesn't matter if they resign. And then he had to cancel out on both of those, on both of his CEO organizations, because he knew that this was going to be a loser no matter what. He just keeps doing it, and he is convinced, although there's an interesting Bannon story, which I'm sure you're going to talk about, Joe, today, I'm convinced that Bannon keeps saying that 33% is what elected you last time. That 33% is what's going to elect you this time. You don't deviate. You got to stay with the plan.
Professor Brown.
Oh, well, I'm listening to Alan's observation about the business community who made the decision en masse to pull out. And I remember for 6 years as a business news reporter, the primary mantra of the CEOs I interviewed in this local market, the Albany market, repeatedly went back to the bottom line. So Alan makes a good point, I think, in talking about business people are most concerned with return on investment and shareholder value and delivering to customers. And if you are alienating your customers, there goes the revenue, there goes profits, and there goes your business. To affix their stars to a falling star would be a failure on their part.
But what if you make airplanes which sell principally to the government? Then what do you do?
They have a quandary. There are many conflicts of interest that have come to light during this administration repeatedly, and they have to work it out.
I don't mean to be idealistic in what I'm about to say. I would like to point out, however, at least in it's my observation, I certainly understand what you're saying about the bottom line, and certainly that is true. However, migration away from these commissions started with African American members, who I think had much more to do with the issues at hand and what it was for them personally.
It's a moral issue.
A moral issue.
Absolutely.
And as well as ultimately a business issue.
I agree with you. Yeah, absolutely. When Kenneth Frazier made the first announcement that he would be departing, he set the stage.
Well, actually, there were people before him who got out over the Paris
climate
accords,
right.
And the rest
yes.
of it. That's right. But I also like to define it as in terms of morality. And what I mean by that is, you see how we're sitting around this table right now? We're all sitting around a table, except it's at home. And, you know, there's always somebody, in my case, it's always Roselle, who, you know, is so much more sensitive to everything that she should be. She's really out front on this. And she says, well, how can you do that? Why aren't you doing more? And I think, not that I'm a slouch on that stuff, but I think that there is always somebody who reminds us that our human dignity is at stake here, as well as our businesses.
Well, that's an interesting point. So the mobile app for the New York Times today, when you call up your stories on your smartphone, you will find a pop-up ad from the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yes.
With a booklet you can download, which I did this morning, a booklet. I think it's 36 pages. It prints out double-sided. On how to combat hate. It's 10 ways to fight hate, and I'm going to be circulating this in class this semester. But so there are solutions out there that we can take advantage of.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Kai Rizdell from Marketplace Radio, when he was reporting on this last night, said something. He said, you know, things in business, things happen slowly until they don't. And which is kind of like, Alan, I was thinking your whoosh, you know, you always talk about the whoosh thing that happens.
That's exactly right.
And I think that's what happened yesterday with business. And Ken Frazier, I think, took the moral leadership, and then it became, I think this began as a moral stand, and then it became an economic issue. But so for me, for businesses, It's great that they got off the council. I mean, I think that that's important. But what's next? And I did hear some reports this morning about, I read last night that Apple's Tim Cook is donating $1 million to the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League. And I'm not clear if it's $1 million each or $1 million total, but also setting up mechanisms through Apple, which you can... there will be some mechanisms to finance some of these anti-hate organizations. And but the other thing that I've thought for a long time, why isn't this happening? I remember a friend of mine working on this issue years ago, and they couldn't get them to budge. But these hate groups are financed through funding that often is enabled over the internet with PayPal and other groups like that. And so now these PayPal and some of these other groups are looking at, can they shut down the ability of these hate groups?
It's the social media groups. There was a great NPR story this morning on just that.
Right.
That the social media groups are saying to the Nazi groups, you can't come on. Even the dark web has said no to access.
Right, because these have been enabled by fundraising.
Right. I mean, that's your point, too, is to not only, yes, to limit the sites themselves.
Right.
But most importantly, to make sure that they're not getting money.
Right. Because there were reporters on last night, the same reporter from Vice News who did that amazing story about what happened in Charlottesville was talking about how they, you know, when she was asked how powerful are they, she was being interviewed, how powerful are they? And they're powerful enough to be able to raise, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in a matter of day or two to finance these rallies and other activities. And so the question is, how do you shut down that flow of money? How do these business people not enable the strengthening of these hate groups? And I think that's really the question for business groups now, just like the question is, who's advertising on Breitbart? There's a couple of groups that point out, you know, that ask people to point out to companies if they're funding Breitbart. Who's enabling these folks?
Bringing up Breitbart is an interesting... Has anyone read the story yet about the Times Magazine? I think it's going to be in this Sunday's, but I had a push copy of that. There is a fascinating New York Times extensive story about the machinations at Breitbart, and that it is not the evildoer that anyone might think it is. I highly commend everyone to take a look at the Times treatment of Breitbart, because they talk to the editors and they're talking to the reporters who did talk to the Times, and there is a very different treatment of Breitbart than what we are used to seeing in the Times. It is much more even-handed, and it portrays Breitbart not as the evildoer that some would say it is.
I do want to get to some of the other matters, especially regarding the military as well as the GOP. We have a couple of letters, Alan. Do you want to get those in?
If you want to. With the latest that is happening, says Gina, why are we not hearing from any Democrats? Wouldn't this be a good time to build a strong Democratic response and a positive message for the future? I've heard no word from Pelosi or Schumer, but it means Schumer, I'm sure, unless there is some dark meaning to a schemer, as in schemer. Thank goodness for Governor McAuliffe. Well, no, there are a lot of Democrats who are speaking out about this. Cuomo was insisting that the military take down General Lead Drive on one of the military bases in New York. A lot of Democrats are vying for intellectual response to all of this. Isn't that true?
I'm more interested in Gina's observation about the proactive response she's seeking, and I agree that the time is really fertile right now for the Democratic Party to get a stronghold, if that's what they want to do. This is the moment.
I mean, I think they're putting out information. They're speaking. They're not breaking through because it's just other news is
Johnny.
I'm just
going to interrupt because as we started our program, the president has tweeted twice in the last 10 minutes.
What did he say?
It's horrible.
Sad to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues and monuments. You, next tweet, can change history, but you can learn from it. Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, who's next? Washington, Jefferson, ? So foolish, ! Also, and then we eagerly await the next tweet.
That's the 33%.
We'll report on that when it comes over
But this is being done in a backdrop of a dangerous confrontation with North Korea. We can't lose sight of that. This president's doing this in the context of a very dangerous confrontation with North Korea. It's irresponsible.
Johnny says, through a 30-year capital, a 30-year Capital Region resident, I am a native of Birmingham, Alabama. Recently visited the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute for the first time. The institute presents a history of the civil rights movement, both in Birmingham and nationally. While I was looking at a photograph of Klansmen wearing their white hoods and robes, a small African-American boy and his mother stood nearby to look at the photo. Then the boy said to his mother, "What kind of robes did the black people wear?" After a short pause, his mother said, "Well, those were different kinds of robes, and they walked on. It's heartbreaking to know that sometime soon this boy, so innocent now, will learn the message that those Klan robes represented." And we heard from Robert, who said, "Racist Trump is getting too much attention. How about some comments on Pruitt's dismantling of the EPA?" Well, we have talked about that many times. We've had Judith Henke here talking about it, and we will continue to.
But that's, I think, an important point about the fact that behind all of this, there are budget cuts that are looming. There are actions that are being taken right now that affect all of our lives.
The president finished his tweet, and so we last left you with the word also, ... The last tweet just came in. The beauty that is being taken out of our cities, towns, and parks will greatly be missed and never able to be comparably replaced.
Well, in other
words, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Well, yeah, but he's also going for it. He's saying, okay, I've been tarnished. I may as well go finish up. If people are calling me a fascist, if people are calling me an anti-Semite,
I'm all in.
Yeah, exactly right. Thank you, Joe. Peter says, hello, panel, and thank you for
Hi.
And thank you for this conversation. It makes sense to deny the white nationalists their symbols like the mayor of Baltimore just did. The white nationalists may still rally, but at least they know that we are paying attention and rebuke their hateful political ambitions.
Does anyone know, we only have 20 seconds, but does anybody know the answer to this? If when they remove the statue, where does it go?
Well, they're talking about in Baltimore putting them in cemeteries where the Confederate soldiers have been buried. The mayor in Baltimore has said that was one plan they were looking at.
And museums. You know,
they should not be torn down the way that happened in North Carolina. I reject that. I think that they should be taken down in a way that moves them and provides a source of education.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. Much more to talk about. And we'll do so with the help of your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Dr. Alan Chartok is with us. Dr. Kaylin Brown is here. Are you a doctor?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Me either. Teresa Bourgeois, I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. This morning, we've been talking about the comments on race by President Trump, and speaking generally in our first segment this morning about how this has affected CEOs. I want to talk a little bit about now how this is Republicans are dealing with this. Five armed, both the military and the GOP. So the condemnation descended on the president today after he told reporters in the news conference at Trump Tower that alt-left demonstrators were just as responsible for the violence in Charlottesville last weekend as the neo-Nazis and white supremacists who instigated that protests that led to the death of a 32-year-old woman struck down by a car driven by a right-wing activist. Five armed services chiefs of the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, and the National Guard Bureau posted statements on social media condemning neo-Nazis and racism in uncompromising terms. They did not mention Mr. Trump by name, but their messages were a highly unusual counter to the commander-in-chief. Republicans, too, issued new denunciations of the hatred on display in Charlottesville, although some remained vague about Mr. Trump's remarks. Vice President Mike Pence abruptly cut short a trip to South America as his aides announced he would return home to attend meetings on Friday and through the weekend at Camp David. The White House insisted that the topic of the meetings would be South Asia. During his travels, Mr. Pence stood by the president but declined to defend Mr. Trump's comments.
Well, this is highly unusual. Of course, we know that because the Joint Chiefs and the military just stay out of American politics. They don't get involved. But in this case, they felt
obviously that they had to do that. And one of the reasons we hear, at least, is because they were told that many of the alt-right demonstrators had been in the Army and were wearing Army uniforms and things of that kind. And they want to make it clear, and they've said it, that anybody who is guilty or found to be guilty of bigotry or spreading that or racism gets thrown out of the Army on their keister. So that's all very positive. I keep thinking that we have always bragged that in the United States, the military a subordinate to the executive. And here, ironically, is that the right word? Mm-hmm. And here, ironically, we see that the military are protective of the constitutional values, not the other way around. What's dangerous about that is that as soon as you accept the premise that, as in Turkey, the military were for years the protectors of, you know, of the secularism of the government, that sooner or later the military get different ideas, a la 7 days in May, and then you may have another kind of problem. But right now it looks like the military are doing the right thing.
I think the question is, will this, his actions, this included, diminish his presidency or the presidency? You know, that's what I worry about, is that is he diminishing not only his own presidency, but the entire world? And certainly the leader of the free world now.
I would argue also, I agree with you, but I also, and just our political culture in general.
Right.
Democracy. What is allowed during a campaign? What is allowed to be said? And then broaden that to civility, free speech, everything.
Right. And again, this has to all be considered in the much, it's hard to broaden out the context here, but we're entering into a range of trade agreements. You know, he's fomented this distress amongst our trading partners and wants to do one-on-one bilateral trade agreements, not these joint trade agreements. NAFTA negotiations started 2 days ago, renegotiating NAFTA. And the Brexit situation is being negotiated all over the world, Asia, and this is all being done in a context of a presidency that's diminished. And, you know, who's the leader of the free world right now?
Angela Merkel.
And China's strength is rising. And this, you know, and the business community is turning against the president. The military is turning against the president. Alan, you've been
Joe Scarborough is turning against the president.
You've been an observer forever. Have you seen anything like the military do this?
No.
Historians. What are
so
they?
Fox News in this Times article, they said Fox News yesterday was saying that they couldn't find a single Republican to come on the air to defend Donald Trump or his remarks.
McClellan, to answer your question. Well, Lincoln and McClellan. McClellan hated what Lincoln was doing and, in fact, ran against him for president. And that's the last time I can think of a general undermining a president. Well, there, of course, was MacArthur.
Is it undermining or is it standing? I think, as you said, they're upholding.
Or contesting.
Contesting. They're upholding democracy, right?
Well, McClellan wasn't.
Right. But I think that these folks yesterday, the—
And MacArthur wasn't.
Well, our military would be adhering to their promise to protect the American people.
Right.
And well, that's protectionism when they're trying to protect the citizenry and its democracy.
Well, Kaylin, the other side of that, of course, is that using that nomenclature of protecting the American people, any heinous would-be dictator would always say the same thing, right?
Yes.
I mean, they would. They would say, I read the Constitution to say I have a duty to step forward now and do something bad. So, yeah, it's a tough one. It's a tough one.
Can I ask Kaylin about there's just been this drumbeat against the media, which has been going on, but it seems in the midst of this, the drumbeat is more incessant. So what's the impact on the public's perception of the media? And the media's ability to do its job.
There are polls showing that, and this has been going on for a long time, that trust in the media is down, but I think the media continues to produce actual journalism, fact-based, document-based journalism that tries to inform the public about what's happening with this democracy, so that people can make informed decisions. Ultimately, one of the goals is that they make informed decisions about who their leaders will be. Journalists are struggling to keep up with this news cycle, and what we need are more journalists, because the baud rate is so great coming out of the White House that we're losing track of other just as equally important stories. You know, you talk about North Korea. Where is the coverage of that now? We're still seeing coverage, but some other coverage is declining or being reallocated. So what we really need are more journalists. I truly think that that would be helpful, even especially beginning at the local level. I think local journalism is a critical area that could be lost. And local people, usually people in communities, want to know what's happening in their own city halls and their own town halls, and how are the people who that are representing them making decisions about what will happen with their tax dollars, with their board of education, with their high school and grammar school.
Well,
go ahead.
Certainly over the next month, I mean, September is a critical month policy-wise, in that the Congress must raise the debt limit in September. There are key budget decisions that need to be made in December. In September, there are a whole host, you know, and then they claim that they're going to move ahead on a tax package and infrastructure package. It's hard to believe. But so all of these impact people locally, and that's the question. How, you know, with all of this talk about hate and, you know, appropriately the topics of the day, what about these other issues, the budget that's going through and these proposed budget cuts and what's going to happen and how that's going to affect people's lives? I mean, that's all getting lost in all of this.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have more letters, and we will talk about other issues, I promise. We'll be right back right after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It's been a very nice morning so far, and there's no reason that we. Why is everyone pointing to the?
Well, because we're pointing at the television screen from CNN.
It's like a cardinal just flew in. I thought everyone was pointing at the bird in the tree. Go ahead.
Which has the Iranian leader's tweet. Which basically says, if you were minding your own business instead of minding everybody else's business, you guys would be a lot better off without using, I'm paraphrasing.
Right. Don't talk to me about hate and discrimination in my country. What about your own?
Yeah. And he specifically mentioned fix the human rights problems going on in the United States. So we clearly have some issues to work on here.
Inarticulately earlier, this is the point I was trying to make, that we are weakened. Our country's position is weakened by this.
Sure.
That our, certainly Trump and hopefully not the entire presidency, is diminished because there are all of these other things going on in the world. And both our allies and our adversaries see that and see us in a weakened position in the midst of all of these trouble spots.
I want to read a letter, if I may, Joe. Do you folks listen to yourself? ? When you stop a form of speech that you find offensive, how long will it be before that same process at a difficult time will shut down your speech and thought? The country was built on the protection of all speech. And that's from Wilson. Well, Wilson, we think we do that. We have well-known conservatives on the show. But in addition, let me say, we read letters like yours.
Was I the only one who didn't get that? I'm sorry.
Well, he's saying this country is built on the protection of all speech.
Chanting,
you know.
I take it.
The Jews will, you know.
And if he says, do you folks listen to yourself with 3? Yeah, we listen to each other. But I don't only listen to us. I watch Fox. I watch CNN. I watch MSNBC. I watch CBS. And I got news for you, Wilson. None of them are being defending this president for what he's done, including Fox.
And the KKK, they have a right to march. Right? If they have permits, they have a right to march. But other people have a right to protest those marches. It should be done peacefully, but free speech would allow that they can march. But it doesn't, allow them to drive a car into a group of people walking down the street.
And Caitlin, you were going to say something?
Well, so aside from the Rip Scaramucci tirade to the New Yorker, there are instances throughout history when journalism has quote-unquote censored certain language or certain ideas used in journalism. And that doesn't negate the First Amendment or free speech. It just requires some editorial
discretion.
Thank you, Alan. To decide what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. Everything is not appropriate. This is not bedlam, although it feels sometimes toward bedlam.
But again, Caitlin, if you look at Fox, for goodness sakes, Fox, or if you read the New York Post, which is admonishing the heck out of Trump for what he's done, or the Wall Street Journal, do you folks listen to yourself? Yeah, and we listen to everybody else also. And I think that that's the point here. I mean, I heard one commentator this morning saying on the TV, saying that we're reaching out all over the place for anybody to come and defend them, to defend Trump, and we can't find them.
There was a really moving moment on Fox yesterday where they brought on two people, a Republican and a Democrat, ostensibly to talk about removing the statues, and both of them agreed. They were both African American, and they were both in tears about this. And the Fox reporter, was in the middle of it, and I think she didn't really grasp how upset they were and the enormity of what they were trying to convey about how deeply disturbing what's going on is. And so, you know, they thought that they were going to have a back and forth. And but instead, they had a very profound conversation about hate in America.
Well, Teresa, you know, the ship is sinking, and people are saying, "Save yourself." I mean, I believe I said it was going to be the whoosh, and it is the whoosh. It's the end. I mean, I don't see how he gets out of this. Joe, I wonder if you and your magic machine could look this up. But I saw a scrawl this morning on a new poll says that Trump is sinking even further. Remember yesterday we had an interesting discussion in which there was a question as to whether Trump's new George Washington remarks and everything else would mean he would have a higher rating. And I saw a scroll going on saying record new ratings, and I'm wondering if we can find whether that's something we already knew about.
The two polls that I see that came out within the last 12 hours, one is a CBS poll. Found that 55% of Americans disapprove of President Trump's response to the white nationalist rally in Charlottesville.
But I'm looking for the trajectory on the approval rating.
Driving is up or down?
I don't see anything new on that.
I do think to the point about
the last one I see is the Gallup one, which I think we mentioned the other day.
35.
Go ahead.
About the sinking, Alan. You're talking about just this specific president, or you're talking about the
greater... I'm talking about this president.
Okay, great.
I'm talking about this president. The ship is going down. You can just see the Marco Rubios, who has been okay on this, and others making a decision as to whether or not they have to get out from under the ship, swim for it, because otherwise they're done.
Well, it'll be interesting to me, and I think there's some list of things to discuss, but the president has said he's wants to go to Phoenix to have a rally. And
that is the next item up for bids.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
So, but it's interesting to me that Phoenix, Arizona, that's the home state of Senator John McCain, who we all know he attacked.
And the mayor is saying stay out.
And the mayor is saying stay out. So will his fellow Republican senators say to the president no? And I thought it was interesting today, not only has he been attacking John McCain, he's now also attacking Republican Senator Jeff Flake, who's in a very tight election race and urging support for his primary opponent. So at what point do the senators turn on him? But
the rally is set for August 22nd, take place at the Phoenix Convention Center. The mayor of the city of Phoenix, Greg Stanton, is not happy about it. The Trump campaign announced the event yesterday, a day after the president blamed both sides for weekend violence in Charlottesville. And the mayor said, "I'm disappointed that President Trump has chosen to hold a campaign rally as our nation is still healing from the tragic events in Charlottesville."
So aside from the mayor requesting that the president give some space and time before he chooses to go on another celebratory tour.
Political rally.
Yes, right. Some sort of a rally event. Trump had told Fox this week that he might, and this is the way he talks in these ifs, he might pardon former Metro Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who was recently convicted in federal court for disobeying a judge's order to stop his traffic patrols that targeted immigrants. I mean, to bait, to do that sort of baiting at this particular moment is more of the same. It's not surprising the president is taking these sorts of tacks, but it does not fit in with anything that's happening in the national conversation about a need to move in a positive direction away from the divisiveness. So this president is out of touch. Completely out of touch.
Again, doing this in the midst of a very delicate time with North Korea, that he would go and have a political rally in the midst of these open wounds about Charlottesville, in the midst of these delicate negotiations with North Korea, he would have a political rally. Alan?
I want to add on to Teresa's question of asking you about this, because to have a political rally, isn't it unusual? I mean, he released a campaign ad this past week. In the last few days, last 2 days, and this is a you'll note I read that the event was announced on the Trump campaign website. So, sure. You know, we're 7 months into
and he's already announced that he's running again, and he's already collecting money. You know, Jim Barber, the famous political scientist, talked about how people. Politicians tend to return to the place of their first great political success. And in this case, his political success, as he sees it, is beating Hillary one way or the other. So he keeps returning to it, even though he's seeing these dismal, terrible numbers coming up. That's number one. Number two, there's the whole question of the base. He is convinced that what he did the last time in those three states with, what did we hear yesterday, 170,000 votes, that's all it was, between those states, is going to work for him again if he just keeps doing what Bannon told him to do in the first place.
Alan, do you think there's something else going on here that we don't know about yet? I mean, in the past, when he has
lashed out erratically,
gone on a tweet storm, usually then a few days after there's some news that then you look back and say, okay, that's why he was so upset. Do you think there's something else going on, or is just this the wish factor? He's overwhelmed.
I don't think any of us have the slightest idea. We do know that he must be getting regular reports from people who have been approached by Mueller, the special counsel. So they're able to pretty well judge how hot Mueller is on the scent. For example, does Mueller have his tax returns? Why didn't he release those tax returns in the very beginning? Does it show anything about the Russians? Does he have anything from the Russians? We already know that a couple of people are turning on him, you know, on that. Did he get any information that Manafort might just try to save himself? What about Flynn? He has a lot of problems.
This president's public persona is one of a work avoidance creature. In the public persona, via the stories that I read, listen to, and watch, I would commend to him the great mayor of Baltimore, who in the still of the night had those statues removed, when she said she was let down by her council people who had had the issue of the statues in front of them for years. And that what they needed to do and didn't do, and which the president might want to consider, is do the work. Do the work. He's not doing any of the work affiliated with his position.
Well, but he thinks he is. And I have to tell you that the mayor, which is interesting, you bring the city council up in Baltimore, she said she was invoking her emergency powers.
She did.
In order to take that down, and that of course is a line right out of the Trump playbook.
We're going to pause there. When we come back, we will talk about other issues. I do want to talk about the Steve Bannon story, which is fascinating as well. We will be back and continue our conversation right after this break. Good morning. Welcome back. Landing a plane. Doing my hand signals. For some reason, Rob didn't understand that. I have no idea why, Rob. That's I'm flailing. I apologize. Both metaphorically and... okay, excellent. All right, we're all set. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. You're all set? You're good? Yeah. Okay, wait, good.
Yeah, no, you're fine.
Alan is seeking nourishment. That's good.
He's snacking.
Yeah, that's good. We'll get him
I'm ready.
Energized.
Are you ready for the eclipse, Alan?
I'm ready.
Did you hear Mike Spain tell the story that he was one of the people that bought the glasses that turned out to be fake? So he's going down to Mike Spain, our wonderful
Mike from the Times Union,
from
our favorite
associate
newspaper.
Editor.
Well, maybe not the favorite.
Okay. Maybe not, at least today. that they went out and they're going to North Carolina next week, and he got all the glasses from Amazon to watch the eclipse, and they turned out to be the fake glasses.
Now, so how did he realize they were fake?
Well, I guess they were notified.
Oh, but, that's a recall.
Yeah.
Can you imagine using fake glasses to watch the eclipse, burning your eyes out, basically.
Yeah.
You don't burn your eyes out, but
the class action suit that would result.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, that'd
you
be
need
a big
the
scene.
Glasses.
Do
to
you
watch
remember
the
in because I remember in school where we had you made that box, right, where you look at
the
thing
box.
And it would show the shadow and you watched it, and that was sort of how you viewed
through
the,
a little hole in
that's
the box.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's right. I remember being out on the parking lot of the Shady Grove Elementary School, watching
Of course, you went to Shady Grove.
Yes, it was Shady Grove. It was suburban Philadelphia. Please, what do you expect it to be?
Shady Grove, my darling.
By the way,
it's a folk song.
Tomorrow, just a quick plug. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to have a wonderful panel, and then following that panel discussion, we're going to have a 90-minute interview with Phil Donahue.
Wow, and you do that.
Yeah, I did an interview. I went down to Manhattan. I talked to Phil Donahue for a couple of hours, and we put it together into a 90-minute special. Sarah LaDuke and I have been working on it for a long time, and it will air tomorrow at 10:30. It'll be from 10:30 to noon, and we're very proud of it. We hope that you'll take a listen to it. He has a lot of very interesting things to say about our state of the world as well as our media landscape.
And it'll be online too, right?
It'll be online immediately following the program, yes.
Right, and is he still married?
He is still married. He has spent, I believe, 37 years married to Marlo Thomas, the daughter of Danny Thomas.
That girl.
That's right.
That's a good show.
And he claims that when he is at the airport, people come running up and say, "I love you, Marlo Thomas," and I don't even know, just don't even see him.
Cool. I think Marlo Thomas, in one of those episodes, took a box of cornflakes because she was having a party and had no appetizers and put peanut butter on each one individually to serve to her guests, if I remember correctly.
That is great. I ought to try that.
You're a serious fan.
That sounds better than a cucumber diet.
Well, that's the extent of my culinary know-how.
I heard a little bit of that cucumber water. Cucumber water is really good. You guys obviously haven't been to the spa.
Cucumber water, cucumber lemonade.
Cucumber water is really good. Yeah. You guys were disparaging cucumber water.
Well, I'm off that diet now.
This is where I heard it. I was trying to remember.
I was driving down the road.
It was.
When in doubt, it's always public radio.
At my
always
dinner table,
public radio.
And I'm like, this cucumber.
All right.
There are people listening to us rolling their eyes.
You know it.
We'll be hearing from them.
They'll write to us.
We'll
get them in a couple
of
minutes.
We all need a little break from
that. But anyway, tomorrow, 10:30.
Two great interviewers talking to each other.
Thank you. We're two Donahues. By the way, we're not related. Steve Bannon calls the far right clowns, and then says enemies are wetting themselves over what is going on, and he opened up saying that some of his enemies in Washington, while calling the far-right elements of the Republican Party a collection of clowns, that he is dismissing those enemies. Ethno-nationalism, it's losers, it's a fringe element. I think the media plays it up too much, and we gotta help crush it, you know? Help crush it more. These guys are a collection of clowns.
And these guys in this case are the dot 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 are what, Joe?
Who are these guys?
The alt-right, I guess.
He, with the Mercer's money for how many years, have worked to give voice to and enable and.
But that's not all that he said in the interview. First of all, he said it was all ex post facto. He said it was
off the record,
which of course it wasn't, and he knows better than that. He's the one, by the way, who called them, not the other way around. He called them to compliment the author on a point that the author had made. So now he says it was off the record, but he's interesting in that. It doesn't always sound. Oh, he made a point in this thing that he would, if racial politics and other things are played up by the Democrats, he'd take all he could of that. Meaning, he thinks that's a losing way. It's a way to lose elections. Identity politics, racial politics, are the way to lose elections. That's an interesting point. Do you think he's right? I mean, he did win an election.
He's been right so far.
Yeah.
We're living in a dangerous world right now, and we're always in a dangerous world, but we're in a very precarious place, as I've said over and over this morning. And I wonder what Rex Tillerson and other folks have to say about, you know, this, his intervention, and as, you know, he's a spokesperson for the White House, and words have meaning and they resonate around the world, what Steve Bannon says, because people know that he's close to Trump. And
Tillerson, but Kelly, right? I mean, this is the person I'm fascinated in of what he's making of all of this. I mean, he's only been on the job for a week and a half, but
they showed him yesterday at the press conference with his hands folded over his chest, obviously looking extraordinarily unhappy.
Distraught. Was grimacing. If you blew up that picture, the still photo of him in the Times, you could see the look on his face. It was pain.
And some made the comment that, that was just, you could make anyone look like that in one photo. But they had a video of him just standing there, just looking like, if I blink my eyes enough, will I just go away? Or will he go away?
But, you know, how does the rest of the world see this, see all of it? I mean, these guys are governing a country. They're in charge now, and they have a responsibility, and I don't think they're living up to their responsibility.
I'm still struck by that Iranian quote from the Supreme Leader over there, basically saying, you folks have no right to come over here and tell us how to behave when you...
They're going to use
basically
this.
Basically have this guy, yeah.
Oh, it's remarkable that... That was tweeted out by the Iranian Ayatollah. The counter-protesting that's happening around the country, I think, is one of the hopes democracy can hang its star on. I think the fact that there are individuals who are continuing to push a different agenda forward than the agenda in the White House is important to note, because I think that if everyone fixates only on the negativity and the position that the administration holds, positive progress will be lost. So there's still progress being made in different fronts. We don't ignore what's coming out of the White House. Obviously not. I don't think there's any fear that we're going to ignore that. But I think it is also important to know where progress is being made.
Well, I don't know about progress, but I do know that the Republicans feel he's screwing it all up. The point being that they want to make, they want to get richer. They always do. So the whole idea of, tax reform, which would help the people at the very top, that looks like it's going to suffer as a result of this. Now you have him going out to Arizona to campaign against Flake, who is a Republican, and put a primary opponent up against him, hoping he can stop the others from doing the same thing. And of course, I can't imagine that Flake's going to be there for, as this thing goes forward.
And today denigrating Lindsey Graham and yesterday. But even Prime Minister Theresa May of Britain yesterday condemned his words and very strongly. I mean, this is a global problem we have. And again, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, as we keep saying.
So great. Thankfully, Mueller is doing the work.
Yes. Do you want to take a break? Are we okay?
No. Nobody has to do the Heimlich, and I shouldn't be eating orange.
Okay.
We all know that.
I didn't know.
We needed to do an emergency Heimlich.
We were worried about you.
Alan on our faces.
We thought Alan was choking. Sorry, folks.
We looked like Kelly there for a minute.
Yes, a little concerned.
You okay? Say a few words, Alan, just so we... You all right?
Well, you know, only once did Roselle save my life by doing the Heimlich. And as you know, she got a lot of mail saying, what'd you do that for?
If you had to do it over again. Okay, so this story, which I find interesting, and then we'll move on to more international stories. But the Look Ahead America, are you familiar with that? Look Ahead America is a group to identify disaffected rural and working class Americans who either do not vote or are not on the voter rolls in order to register and mobilize them ahead of future elections. This is a prospectus that is being distributed to possible donors. All of this going on is from a group of the president's former campaign aides who are beginning an effort to encourage new voters in parts of the country that supported him in the election and to stop what they contend are illegal votes in Democratic areas.
So let's get this straight. In this election that went by, he said what? It's going to be a rigged election.
Right.
There's already indications from the kind of stuff that we're hearing from him now that the next election is going to be rigged. There's already an online petition going around saying we should call off the next election until they get rid of the illegal voters. So the mythology that is being created by Trump and his people is that people are voting illegally. And when we know that all of the indications are that it's not so. So I'm only saying it's perfectly logical that they're now going to build up this myth, this narrative, that things are illegal, that a lot of illegal people are voting. And perhaps to try to call off an election, something, by the way, that I don't know that they can do because of the states' rights and amendments. But the fact that it's even being talked about confirms that I said in the beginning that they were going to try it, because this is a guy, if it looks like he's going to lose, he won't stop anywhere.
Well, the other purpose of this Look Ahead America, to go out and register more voters, the Times story talks about how the intent is to go out into rural areas and try to reach out to people who might not have voted and to shore up a potential population that could feel disenfranchised or disconnected from what has been talked about as the elite or the progressive movement. So in an effort to maybe build on what has been characterized as the base, Look Ahead would be moving in that direction. One has to wonder, how are other political movements behaving now in preparation for the next election cycle?
Right. And I think, you know, it's democracy if what you're doing is focusing on trying to identify potential disaffected voters and get them to lean your way. That's democracy. And if that's all that's happening, that's great. Go ahead and do it. It's the issue that I think we have to stay focused on is the efforts to take people off the voting rolls, to diminish people's capacity to vote. Now, I was struck by Susan Breaux. She's the mother of Heaven Heyer, and at the memorial, who was killed in Charlottesville. And at the memorial service yesterday, her remarks were just so powerfully beautiful. And she said you need to find that small spark, that issue that you want to get involved in, and find a way to make a difference in the world. Find a spark of conviction, find that action, spread it, have a comfortable dialogue, you know, turn not to hate or violence or fear, but channel it into action. And I think that one of the actions that one hopes that people find a spark and focus on is this access to voting and making sure people are enrolled and make sure that they have their IDs and so on and so forth. We need to get people to vote.
All right, let's go to some letters and that will finish us out for this morning.
Okay, James, PhD, writes, he is a study in tolerance. I imagine he's talking about the president. The smears are pointless and just more reinforcement to those of us that appreciates our president. Sorry, your group chooses only to criticize. History is in the past and can be a valuable way to understand our great country again. Cheers from James, PhD. Scott says, dear panel, in America there are certain topics and ideas that are not protected by free speech because they are so abhorrent and undermine the core value of the nation. No city would issue a permit for child molesters. What merit is there in debating or lending credibility to racist ideology that dehumanizes fellow citizens? There is no middle ground with hate, and thank you from Scott. And Robert says, why does Alan envision What does Alan envision happening when he says that the whole Trump thing is coming down, falling apart? Does that mean a point will be reached, parenthesis, finally, when the Republicans somehow take action to stop or impeach him? I do believe that's going to happen. I do believe that's going to happen. I believe this guy, when Mueller gets through, does face the possibility of impeachment. And as Trump alienates those in his own party, particularly office holders, by threatening them and running people against them and the rest of it, that he really is setting up his own demise. I believe that. Okay, so good morning, panel.
Good morning.
How do we prevent loving children from developing into hateful adults?
Keep loving them and hugging them every day and teaching them love.
Teach them to read also.
Lots of reading.
And Danny says, I believe very strongly that everyone has a right to their opinion and government shouldn't censor or oppress our freedom of speech. But as a black person in this country, I'm told I'm a lesser human being because of my skin color. Doesn't seem to be like reasonable free speech. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. What amazes me, says James, is that these all-right neo-Nazis, white nationalists, do all these terrible things for their, quote, love of this country. Yet we literally fought a world war against these ideas. How do they proclaim their love and of devotion to this country? And that's from James. Well, nothing stops them. Yeah, you can just shove those over towards Joe. He takes those, and then we throw them in the garbage can.
I worry that people have lost a sense of the history on that, though. The younger generation may not understand the import of Nazis and such.
Ildo says, Fox, not Sean Hannity, still defending Trump for his despicable comments. He is point the finger at the media for misunderstand Trump. Keep up, P.S., keep up the good show, and that's from Ildo. Okay, and Molly says, a Supreme Court decision on this subject, I don't remember which justice phrased it, put forth that you can't shout fire in a crowded theater. That's correct. Speech is as free as most actions in this country unless they endanger others. The Nazis and white supremacists are inherently threatening in that they preach throwing those they hate out of the country. Theirs is not free speech. And that's from Molly. Well, Molly, here's the problem with that. I think the reaction to these reprehensible thugs has been remarkable. And if you didn't allow them out, then you would have, you know, the American people would not be where we are right now. So that's the downside. As you know, the Supreme Court also said that the hateful people who demonstrated all those years ago in Skokie, Illinois, yelling anti-Semitic slurs, very painful to many of us, were within their rights.
They had a right to do
that.
Congressman Tonko responded to the president's tweets by saying, Mr. President, it would be helpful for us to hear from you what you think the lessons of this shameful part of American history should be.
Did you want to say something?
Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center, in its booklet that's available for free for anyone, notes that one thing that we should all be doing if we object to what's happening on the national landscape is act, do something in the face of hatred. Apathy will be interpreted as acceptance by the perpetrators, the public, and worse, the victims.
Well, that's a good point.
So action.
Good point.
All right, we'll pause there. And my thanks to all involved, Alan, Kaylin, Teresa, thank you very much. We will commence and have another panel tomorrow. Meanwhile, the roundtable continues after this.